Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
It's gone from suck to blow.
What?
All right, you know, here's the deal. And like, Joe Flacco's a great guy. I did a Baltimore game last year. He did a great job mentoring the young quarterback in Lamar Jackson. You know, I mean, he made the best of a bad situation for him and did a great job with the kid. As a matter of fact, he supported him during that playoff game and was like, no, man, you know what? This is his team. Let's roll this way. So he did a great job with all that stuff. Good for Joe Flacco. And is Joe Flacco an upgrade? Absolutely, he's an upgrade. Can he throw the deep ball better and all that, take some shots down the football field? Yes, 100%. All those things are true about Joe Flacco. But the same issues exist. If you're going to be more than a below average offense, because that's what you've been since 2015. Since midway through 2014, you have been a below average offense. That's where you're at. And if you're going to be more than a below average offense, I don't care about, listen, Emmanuel Sanders has been great. Don't care. Sutton, great. Don't care. Like Philip Lindsay, great. Don't care. If you don't build this team from the inside out and protect Joe Flacco, who's a deep drop, allow things to develop and push the ball down the football field quarterback, then you're going to be 6-10 again. That's where you're at right now. So you've got the quarterback. Maybe it's a Band-Aid. Maybe it's more than a Band-Aid. Not sure yet. We're going to find out. But I guarantee you one thing. They won't be efficient offensively unless they fix this offensive line, and they took the first step in doing that in hiring Mike Munchak, right, and Chris Cooper. Now comes the time to get more depth and to create some starters and to get better players through free agency and the draft, and that's the direction they have to go. They've got several steps. They've taken several steps, and they filled several holes. But they've got more work to do over there at Dove Valley before they put their kids in. Before they put their cleats on the grass.
That was awesome.
Clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
Kind of got me mid-burp there.
Yeah. How'd that taste?
I like coffee.
A little West Rock there. A little added West Rock. A little West Rock bubble.
By the way, I'm as fat as I have been since I retired.
Are you at, have you hit 270 yet?
Not quite, but I'm almost there.
I eat because I'm unhappy. I'm unhappy because I eat.
Are you like one Egg of McMuffin away from 270?
If I ate an Egg of Muffin, I'd probably be over.
Oh, that close.
You know what? As a matter of fact, when I came back from Guillain-Barré syndrome or Guillain-Barré or whatever you call it. I don't even know what to call it. And I came back to Washington that year after being sick for so long. And I still was, you know, minus some feeling in my toes and everything else. And I came at camp. I'm as heavy right now as I was then.
All right. Suit up. Let's go. Don't worry. I'm sure you will get serious now.
Now it's because I've been talking about getting serious for the last year and a half.
You gotta get serious now, but now it starts.
Who's in with me?
Let's do this.
I started at 269 today, people. Today is the first day.
The Flacco move, I think what it's still, I keep coming back to this. Is he better? Does he have more potential for this team than Case Keenum did?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, and you only are really committed to Joe Flacco for a year, right?
Yes.
Then what's the harm?
I think...
What's the harm in taking... Look, over there at Dove Valley, John Elway clearly believes this was a team that was poorly coached and mismanaged the last couple of years to the extent where it cost the Broncos 3 wins. And that simply by having better coaching, you immediately enter the 9-win zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even with Case Keenum.
Yeah.
I think that was his belief. So now if you take Joe Flacco And you're sitting here right now saying Joe Flacco represents an upgrade. Maybe not significant, but an upgrade nonetheless over Case Keenum. Match that with what he believes could be an even better defense this year. Then can you understand why John Elway is looking at 2019 as a chance to capture 2015 like lightning in a bottle again? Look at the similarities. Don't have a great quarterback. You don't have great quarterback play, but you have the potential for adequate quarterback play. Match that with a very good defense. Maybe a defense that has a chance to be great and much better coaching. Can you understand why John, who clearly has no interest, none whatsoever, in stepping back and going on the kind of path that is time consuming, patience, hey, I'm only interested in building the next great Bronco team. Nope. He's interested in going for it this year.
Which, listen.
Can you see why he might be thinking that?
Absolutely. Without question, I can see that. But
is that foolish?
Yes.
You think it's foolish?
Because I think you're kidding yourself on your roster. I don't think you can have a great defense. Do you right now? I mean, you look at the edge rushers. What do you think is better? DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller from 2015 when Von Miller was still in his prime. Not that he's not still in his prime, but you know what I'm saying. Or Von Miller now and Bradley Chubb. Derek Wolfe, who's had multiple injuries. Was he better in 2015? Malik Jackson, was he better in 2015 than what you have right now in Adam Gotsis? The linebacking core, was it better then than it is now? The secondary, certainly better then than it is now. Like, do you really think you're going to have an elite, great defense?
It's a bit of a Hail Mary, but at this point, can you understand why he's willing to heave it?
Right. I would say this, though. If you're sitting there saying, hey, we're 3 wins different if we had better coaching. Like last year, 3 wins better if you had better coaching. Does all of a sudden Joe Flacco adding that to the mix and adding another $18 million against your salary cap that you could have used to maybe sign a C.J. Mosley and a couple other people? Does that make you 5 games better? Now do you go to 11? Because I would say no way. I think it's still the same three games you were thinking about. How much better did you really get?
So what does that mean for the upcoming draft in regards to a quarterback? Is there still a chance that you draft a quarterback at 10? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Mark, the acquisition of Joe Flacco. Let's say my theory's right. And John Elway, he's not interested in rebuilding projects, anything like that. He's interested in going for it this year. He's trying to capture 2015 Super Bowl 50 lightning in a bottle again. If that's what he's doing, then at number 10, with the 10th overall pick, you gotta pick defense, right?
You gotta take I would think you'd have to take one of the elite level corners. And the one thing we've seen out of the elite guys, out of the guys who are drafted, you know, in the top 10 type of players at the cornerback position, we have seen those guys come right in and be like star level players. Denzel Ward last year for Cleveland before he got hurt. Star level player. Year before that, it was Marcus Lattimore from the New Orleans Saints. Come right in and be a, you know, play at a Pro Bowl type level. You know, where they just locked up in, you know, they're locked up in kind of man coverage. They're either playing three or one, and they're locked up in man and saying, you take that third of the field. And those guys have come in pretty simple, too, when you think about, you know, responsibility. You're not being asked to do a lot. You're not being asked to play a ton of different techniques, because most teams play, you know, I mean, most teams play, like I said, one or three. For the majority of teams, that's what they're playing now, with the eight-man fronts, the way they're playing those things. So, like, we've seen a ton of success of teams doing that. And there's a couple of guys, like, there's a couple of guys out there in this draft that are considered those top-level kind of cover corners. So that to me would probably be the one place that would make the most sense.
Do you get a khaki pants quarterback this year? So by the way, you didn't get a chance to react. I picked my two. I could have gone five, but I chose just two.
Right.
Khaki pants quarterbacks to zero in on.
Mm-hmm.
Khaki pants quarterbacks that you could take rounds two, three, or four. Went with Will Grier from West Virginia.
Yeah.
And from the Wolfpack, because we're now dubbed the Wolf ourselves Pack, the yeah. Wolfpack, because wolves do not concern themselves with the opinions of sheep. Ryan Finley from the NC State Wolfpack. Does this move, especially since Flacco is a guy that technically you really, he's a one-year guy.
Right.
If it doesn't work out, you can move on after a year. Do you cover yourself by drafting a rookie quarterback?
I think again, and I have been consistent in saying this, I think every year you have to be in the draft a quarterback category and just see if you can find if one of the guys just makes sense. Grier, I like I've watched him play a couple of games at West Virginia and I liked him a lot. I just like there was some, he had some swagger about him, some ability about him. I haven't seen the Finley kid play, although he does look tall. So maybe he would be, you know, maybe Vance Joseph will stand on the table for him in Arizona for them to draft Finley.
You know, winning's tall.
Because he does, he looks.
He is tall. He's 6'4". He looks even taller.
Yeah, he's 6'4", but he looks taller than that. So, yeah, I really haven't watched him play. So, I'll defer to your, you know, quarterbacking expertise. Does he have a good foot triangle?
Excellent foot triangle.
Man, well,
rhythm passer.
Okay.
Very good at throwing guys open.
That's what your scouting tells you?
That's what my scouting tells me.
Love it.
I've been breaking down the film.
All right.
Put the tie on the door.
Mm-hmm. Don't come in here. Watch the quarterback's play.
Look at him over here.
Look at the khaki pants.
But you have to. So there's no way you could draft a quarterback at number 10. You can't be,
no.
You know, some people have theorized that, hey, you know, you go for it with Joe Flacco, but you still draft your so-called quarterback of the future to groom behind him. But see, that doesn't make sense to me because the Flacco move to me represents we are all in. We're going for it now. So you got to use that 10th pick to bring in an impact player that can help you right now. And
correct.
It's got to be on the defensive side of the ball.
Correct. I believe that. You know, I've heard people speculate about Kyle Murray. And listen, as good as Kyle Murray is, and he was phenomenal, you know, running around, he's unbelievable athletic, throws the ball, you know, with probably better mechanics and better understanding of the passing game than people give him credit for. So I think he's all good with that stuff. I don't see him at, like, for a short guy, even short guys think he's short, you know? I still don't see him as a long-term fix at the quarterback position. I see him kind of like I saw Lamar Jackson coming out. I mean, I'm just telling you, Lamar Jackson throwing the football, I just don't know that he'll ever even be average, efficient. He's a phenomenal athlete. Don't get me wrong, guys. Phenomenal. But that offense that the Baltimore Ravens ran last year, and they ran it into the playoffs, Mike, to win that division, I don't buy that offense long term. And I don't, you know, they hope and they are trying to work with him to get him to the point where he can be a little bit of both. more traditional, but have the threat, kind of almost Russell Wilson-esque, where you have the threat of him running, but you're running more of a traditional offense, and he's really holding the backside for you in the running game so you can be great and efficient in the running game. The difference is Russell Wilson is a skilled thrower of the football. Lamar Jackson is not. And I don't think that's sustainable. And I don't think 5'9", 190 pounds or whatever he is, I don't think that's a long-term recipe for success. That's me. I don't know. And I obviously could be wrong. I mean, he could be great, and he could be one of those guys that just never seems to get squared up. He might be really efficient from the pocket. I don't know. I just don't think that's a long-term recipe.
Never let it be said that all I am is fixated on khaki pants quarterbacks. I like the idea of using a first-round pick on a quarterback if to me he checks all the boxes. Guys that were picked in the draft last year, none of them did it for me. And I am very, very confident none of them are going to come back and really, really haunt the Broncos passing on them, especially Rosen, especially Allen.
Yeah. The guys that were, the
maybe
guys that were.
Maybe Baker. But
Baker, they weren't getting up to number one. So Baker, you take Baker off the table. He was on the table at five for them.
Okay. So I like Jake Fromm from Georgia. I like him a lot.
Uh-huh.
I want a bomb for Fromm. But can you do that? Can you go all in and all after it this year? And if it doesn't work out, just say, all right, gave it a shot. Now we're going to try to go after one of these quarterbacks in 2020 or 2021 that could really be our long-term guy. That even Mike Evans endorses. Us going after.
No.
Can you do that? My concern is that are all you doing with this Joe Flacco move is playing yourself further into NFL purgatory, which means you're not good enough, but you're not bad enough.
Right.
That's my concern. The last place I want to be is NFL purgatory. Don't want to be there. I either want to be really good or I want to be really bad. But what you've done, I think, with this move and what you already have on defense and have the chance to add to the defense is maybe it pops. And maybe you got 2015 all over again. Or maybe you just play yourself in NFL purgatory. Then what do you do?
Yeah, I'm more worried about the latter than the first, Mike. I still don't think you're any closer, even with Flacco. Are you closer to beating Kansas City? Are you closer to beating the LA Chargers? Are you more competitive with them? The answer to me is not really.
Well, then there is the other X factor in all this that clearly John Elway is counting on, banking on. We'll tell you what that is in Four Down Territory next.
Professional football in America is a special game.
This is Four Down Territory.
I'd like to start out with a thank you to John Elway.
That just happened.
All right, now, I'll kill a snitch. I'm not saying I have.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountain?
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for.
First down.
Keenum moves up, lines right past on the far side. Oh, he overshoots a wide open Demaryius Thomas at the five down the far sideline. It whistled right over his gloved fingertips. Just that close.
Oh, man. Westwood One Radio. You wonder if Case Keenum completes that pass and they beat the Chiefs, walk off the Chiefs. How much does that change last season? How much does that change who the head coach is? And certainly who the quarterback is. Case Keenum, what's his future?
He'll be backing up somewhere in the NFL and being a really good backup.
But not here.
No, not here. And there's some offset language apparently in his contract, according to Mike Kliss, that helps, you know, ease some of the pain. If he ends up going somewhere for $4 million, it takes away the $7 million the Broncos owe him, and it becomes a $3 million. It's still
the
gonna
cap
be,
hit. The, still
this cap hit's still going to be $10 million,
right?
But it just saves them some cash.
So I know Mike was talking about how Joe Flacco's contract is very team friendly. It ranks 21st in salary at $18.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, you're going to be investing $28 million in cap space in your quarterback next year. Adding in Keenum's. So now it becomes pretty pricey. And it does affect what you're going to be able to do in free agency, because that is less cap money.
It's correct.
It's math. It's math, everybody. Next in four down territory.
Second down.
Well, we're going to work together on all of that stuff. I know that's a stock answer, but we're just going to work together on it. John, when it comes draft day and when it comes time to pick the final 53 of the team, if there's arguments or disputes that we can't settle through thorough discussion, it's John's baby.
The other day, Vic Fangio created some headlines when he told Woody Page that he wasn't interested in Band-Aid approaches.
Mm-hmm.
So does this move fly directly in the face of what Vic Fangio says he wants to avoid?
I believe that it's a Band-Aid move, because I just believe you have so many other issues, and it has nothing to do with what I think. I mean, he does not elevate people around him. He is not a force multiplier. He does not all of a sudden make your offense, your offensive line better. Like, he's not one of those guys like Brady or Manning that's going to get rid of the ball in 2.0 seconds or 1.8 seconds so that you can't get pressure on him. He's a guy that requires deep drops, climb the pocket and chuck one down on a deep dig or a post or something of that nature, a deep over route. It takes a little time to develop. And that, to me, does not help a struggling offensive line.
But he does know Joe Flacco. He was in Baltimore with Flacco.
Mm-hmm.
He's seen Flacco at his best. He's seen Flacco be very good.
Yeah.
So can you understand why a guy who maybe isn't interested in Band-Aid approaches but does realize, hey, this is going to be my first and probably only crack at being a head coach. I got to make a good first impression. I'd rather go with a guy I know in Joe Flacco than somebody I don't in Case Keenum. So maybe in his mind, that isn't a Band-Aid.
Yeah. And the other thing is with this offensive approach, it's not going to be, from a terminology standpoint and an execution standpoint, with Scangarello, this is going to be very similar. Obviously, little things, little tweaks here and there, but the base of the offense is going to be what Joe Flacco ran under Gary Kubiak in 2014. So there's going to be a lot of similar terminology, and the understanding of concepts are going to be the same. Like, it'll be a fairly smooth transition, I would assume.
Next in four down territory.
Third down.
He steps forward, throws it on the run, down the field, the pass.
Got it. He's caught for the touchdown by Antonio Brown.
Antonio.
Steelers radio right there. So if the Broncos are viewing this as a year in which they absolutely believe they can compete,
mm-hmm.
How do they approach free agency? How do they approach trades? Do you suddenly look at a guy like Joe Flacco? You say that Joe Flacco is not a force multiplier.
Right.
So you got to go find yourself force multipliers. Is Antonio Brown somebody now you have to target if he's going to be available? Damn the cost.
Right. I don't think it's so much even about the cost. It's about the personality. You can't get along with Ben Roethlisberger and a dynamic offense, one of the most dynamic offenses in football, in Pittsburgh, with a player-friendly coach. I just don't know that it's going to work out here. I mean, can you imagine Antonio Brown when the Broncos are putting up 18 points a game and he's getting four targets? I mean, it's going to cost you more in replacing Gatorade containers than it costs you in salary for Antonio Brown. He'll be busting up Gatorade, the big Gatorade buckets on the sideline. Those things aren't going to be safe.
Next, and by the way, with the move for Flacco, right now the Broncos have about $25 million in cap space. Now they can get some more by releasing Case Keenum and releasing some other players. But, you know, then it gets to the point, well, okay, you already have some holes. If you create some more holes by releasing players, just how much are you going to be able to make up through free agency? Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
We've got a couple problems. One, the quarterback is hurt. You watch Paxton Lynch. He's actually laying down on the sideline. I don't know if he pulls a hamstring or what. Just watch this. A little sprint. Oh, yeah, you can see right there. Yep. I think he pulled a muscle.
You're right.
Maybe that right hamstring or right calf or something.
And here comes Trevor Siemian warming up on the sideline.
Look, part of the reason why, you know, I'm a believer in the khaki pants quarterback theory is that with not only have there been far more misses among first round quarterbacks over the last decade plus than hits, but the problem with all those misses is the long drawn out ramifications of missing on a first round quarterback. One, you passed on a player or players that could have been much more impactful for you. Two, because it's a first round pick, you're more likely to cling to the idea that you can still get something out of this guy. And as a result, you keep him around longer than he should be. And then you make moves, subsequent moves, to try to cover up for the fact that you missed on your first round quarterback. So think about it. Not only did you have, what, this would have been Paxton's
fourth year. Right.
So you had 3 years. And they didn't draft a quarterback last year, first round or second round or third round, because in part they still held out hope that Paxton could turn it around. That was a pipe dream. So 3 years right there. You made the move for Case Keenum to cover for the fact that you missed on Paxton.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're making the move for Flacco because Keenum didn't work out.
Right.
I mean, you see all the effects and how it can, you know, really linger 6 degrees of Paxton Lynch failure.
Yeah, it was. It is one of those things that kind of haunts you. I think the biggest thing, Mike, is being, call it prideful, whatever you want to call it, hopeful, and not recognizing that this is just not. This was just a miss, swing and a miss, and you know, instead of just being strike one, you end up being strike three because you keep trying to make it work, keep trying to take hacks at it. That's the biggest failure of the whole thing is to not recognize, this isn't going to work out. We need to move on.
All this talk about band-aids. All they're doing is stacking more band-aids. I'm going to tell you why the Broncos are not in band-aid mode right now. That's next.
You got it all in the palm of your hand. Put your hands wet with sweat.
Is this the John Elway theme song?
I didn't say you did.
Well, you started talking earlier about John maybe fooling himself, kidding himself, if he thinks that this is a team that's going to be able to capture 2015 like lightning in a bottle again. So you start talking, I'm like, what's that song by Styx? Was it kidding themselves, fooling themselves? And there you go.
Such a caring young man.
So is John Elway fooling himself?
I do think when you look at this roster, if you think Flacco is going to bring you, if you think Flacco is going to take you from 6 wins to all of a sudden competing for the division without significant help around him, I do think you're fooling yourself on that. Honestly, when you look at this roster and you look at the addition of Flacco and the addition of a different head coach in Fangio, who's never been head coach before, but, you know, has been in this league for a very long time. Honestly, I mean, where do you come down on that? Do you think that this team is a lot closer to competing with the Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs?
No, I think this is a team that needs to rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, including myself, the initial just gut reaction I had in the first few moments after I heard about the Flacco trade, which came down after about 10 minutes after we were done yesterday, was, wow, John just doesn't care about the future of the Broncos. He's just willing to mortgage the future and let it be somebody else's problem. That was my initial reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had a chance to sit back, study a little bit more, take a look at it. And I don't think John is being irresponsible here. I think this is what's happening. John is making a push for it this year. But if it doesn't work out, you're really technically right back to where you were going to be anyway with Case Keenum as the quarterback. Everybody who's saying Joe Flacco is a Band-Aid, Case Keenum was set up to be your Band-Aid this year. Joe Flacco is just a better Band-Aid. You went from a generic Band-Aid to a Johnson & Johnson Band-Aid.
Right.
Still a Band-Aid, but a little bit better Band-Aid. But it still doesn't effectively change the direction that so many of us felt that the Broncos were going in and would have to go in eventually. The idea was is that, all right, the quarterback this year, it's going to be a Case Keenum-led offense, not expecting a whole lot, and you can continue the rebuild of the Broncos and target one of these quarterbacks that look to be more of a sure thing in 2020 and 2021. Has that really changed? You've got Joe Flacco for this year. After this year, there's no guaranteed money. You can still stay on that track if it doesn't work out with Joe Flacco this year. You had 9-10 guys that came out of your draft slash free agent class last year. You have another 8 picks in this year's draft. Who knows what you do in undrafted free agency. There's a good chance you're going to have 20-plus 2022 first and second year players on this team this year. So the notion that somehow the future's being mortgaged, I mean, this was one of the youngest teams in the NFL a year ago. This was a top five young, one of the youngest teams in the NFL a year ago, and I think they're going to stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
So have you really mortgaged your future, or do you give Elway credit for sort of trying to do two things at the same time? Take one last push for it this year. Go for it. Try right. to capture some 2015 like lightning in a bottle. And then if it doesn't work out, go about the business of rebuilding starting next year. Since you're not tied to Flacco. Now, if you were tied to Flacco for 3 years,
right,
then it's like, what are you doing? Are you delusional?
Right.
You are fooling yourself. But the fact that it is shaping up as kind of a one-year Hail Mary, what do we got to lose? Why not?
Here's my point. You've added, essentially, once you get rid of Keenum, you've added a quarterback at $18.5 million. You're at $28.5 million for your quarterback. So you're paying, essentially, through the two quarterbacks that you've had on your roster, you're paying Joe Flacco as though he were Aaron Rodgers.
Correct.
And he's not.
No.
And you have so much more to do on your roster when it comes to building through free agency, building, you know, through the draft to really make you relevant again. So, you know, you just cost yourself. So now, so to get that $10 million of cap hit back from the Case Keenum, you know, the Case Keenum experiment, where do you go? Where do you, I mean, you're going to get Brandon Marshall. Is he going to be gone? That's $2.5 million, right? Are you going to let Emmanuel Sanders go at $11 million or whatever it is? I don't know how much dead cap money Emmanuel's contract would be. I just, you know, there's a lot. Do you go after Pierre Garçon, who the 49ers going to let go, who's been a consummate professional, although he was hurt a bunch last year. But, you know, that guy's a professional mentor, professional wide receiver, and he's a physical specimen. He just had a bunch of injury issues last year. Do you look at him like, hey, he's going to be healthy and he'll be fine? You know, there are plenty of guys within that roster that praise Pierre Garçon for what he's meant to them, the way he's mentored those young receivers, even while hurt last year. He is the consummate professional. And remember, man, he was in the RG3 year in 2012. He was big time for the Washington Redskins. He's been big time in San Francisco as well. Now they're letting him go. Would he be a guy that you get in at a cut rate price and let Emmanuel go and say, okay, we're going to, you know, swap this for this, and he's going to mentor our young receivers, and he's going to be a great mentor for them, and he really knows this offense. Like, would that be a move that you would make? And there's a lot of moves that have to be made, but the bottom line is this, again, I just think this roster, I think one, if you don't build from the inside out on the offensive side of the ball, you're in trouble. And I think, like, Philip Lindsay is great, and he's a knifing type of runner, and he doesn't take a lot of big hits, and he's great, but you still have to be able, and it was proven last year, regardless, you still have to be able to hold up in third down and long situations and push the ball down the football field. And if you can't, or if your, you know, offensive line is getting called for holding and tackling and everything else, you're just not going to survive.
Here's my only problem with what they're trying to do. And that is they're trying to serve two masters at the same time. They're trying to go for it this year, but still allow themselves the potential to rebuild at the same time. All these draft picks from last year, more draft picks coming on. They theoretically can continue this youth movement while trying to go for it this year. Here's the problem. Is that if there is a quarterback in 2020 or 2021 that you really like, and for me, I really like Jake Fromm. I want to bomb for Fromm. To me, he checks all the boxes. Do you play yourself into that NFL purgatory? You know, where you're in that 7-9, 8-8, 9-7 world.
Right.
Where you're just good enough to not be great.
Right.
But just good enough not to be really bad.
Right. And you're getting the 20th overall pick or the 18th overall pick.
And so if you have that kind of year, you say, all right, we're going for it. We believe that Joe Flacco still has a lot left in the tank. We believe that Joe Flacco reunited with a true Gary Kubiak-like disciple will unlock everything that Kubiak did for Flacco back in 2015, combined with the pieces that we still have left on defense, combined with some of the pieces we can add, combined with the expert coaching of Vic Fangio, we have a chance to recapture what we did in 2015 and go win ourselves a Super Bowl. And John Elway can look and say, there you go. My legacy as a general manager is complete. But if that doesn't happen, how do you go from NFL purgatory to being able to put yourself in a position to go land one of these quarterbacks? How do you go from NFL purgatory and go get yourself in a position to go get Jake Fromm?
Well, I think the big thing, Mike, is one, you have to know what you want, and you have to be completely sold out. Like Cleveland was completely sold out on Baker Mayfield. I mean, Baker Mayfield, to them, had all the physical tools. But more importantly to them, more importantly, you know, it's funny. All the physical stuff and the attributes and how big is he and how hard, you know, how big is his arm and all that kind of accurate and all that stuff mattered to them. But you know what mattered the most? Attitude. Alpha male. Came in, took charge. Like, they loved the swagger more than anything else. That was the number one thing. Like, I'm sitting there talking to John Dorsey for a half an hour. And John Dorsey is like, dude, this kid blew me away. I mean, he walked right in from day one. He wasn't even the starter day one. If you remember, It was the other cat from, what's the other quarterback's name? The kid that played at Baltimore that, you know, Gary Kubiak loved. I can't even remember his name now. That's where it's gone. Heck, what's that kid's name? I can't even believe
it. Tyrod Taylor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
And John Dorsey, their GM, is like, dude, he came right in from day one and was in charge. Like, getting in receivers' faces if they ran the wrong route. I mean, it has the ability to do that, and still everybody loves him, you know? So it's like, ah, come on, you know. Afterwards, it's kind of one of those, you know, give him a noogie. It's going to be okay, guy. And he just had that ability. And so they were completely sold more than anything. They were sold on him as a leader, as a guy that was going to come change the culture of their franchise. And that to me was the biggest thing they took away from. Like, you look at the juxtaposition of the way that Cleveland looked at, you know, looked at Baker compared to what the Broncos looked at with Paxton Lynch. They looked at tall, big arm, athletic, can really, you know, can really let it loose. And none of the other stuff, where the Cleveland Browns looked at in charge, swagger, confidence, leader, guy that just comes out and does all those things.
Boy, did you change your tune on Baker Mayfield from where you were a year ago at this time?
Oh, well, I mean
a complete 180.
How can you not? I mean, I'm not one of those guys that's going to, hey, if I'm wrong, I'm just going to double down on it. I'm not Skip Bayless. I mean, if you're wrong, you're wrong. I'm okay with being wrong. My big thing on Baker Mayfield was coming out of the system. I've seen so many guys struggle coming out of the system. And, you know, by all accounts, the guy has the photographic memory when it comes to being able to call plays and do all those things. So, yeah, completely flipped. You know, you need to find a team. Like, you need to find a quarterback. If you find a quarterback, here should be the criteria for John Elway and the Denver Broncos. Find somebody that you look at like Stokely looks at Peyton Manning.